This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. This was Charlotte Mayor Anthony Fox on the morning of April 3rd, when at the end of this program, I asked him about the rumor that he might become the nation's next Secretary of Transportation.
Mike, I have plenty to say grace over right here. We've got an airport we're trying to keep vibrant. We've got a stadium and a downtown we want to continue growing. And we also have a transit plan that we need to get reinvigorated.
Have you been approached?
Mike, I'm happy being Mayor of Charlotte. Thank you.
Are you not allowed to talk about it?
I'm allowed to talk about great things about being Mayor of Charlotte. And I love
Would the job be attractive to you?
I am very happy doing what I'm doing.
Would you take it if offered?
Mike, I am so happy being here with you today. I'm telling you, I'm having a lot of fun. Thank you.
Let me ask this. A lot of Charlottians were excited by Pat McCrory going to the governor's mansion because they thought that was going to bring nice things to Charlotte. We're learning otherwise at the moment. If you went to Washington, would nice things come our way from D.C.?
I'm looking forward to catching up with the governor soon. He and I promised to grab lunch, and I'm looking forward to that and hopefully some good things coming to Charlotte.
And just to be clear, you're happy being here?
Yeah, I'm very happy.
Happy or not, less than a month later, President Obama announced that he was nominating Mayor Fox to be the next Secretary of Transportation, and Fox stood at the president's side when the announcement was made. The mayor had already decided not to run for another term, and after he made that announcement, a passel of possible candidates made their intentions known. But if the mayor is confirmed as Transportation Secretary, he will leave before his term is up. What will that mean for Charlotte, and what will a move to D.C. mean for Fox and for the city? We're going to look at that and some other news of note with two journalists and one of our favorite political scientists. Julie Rose from WFAE News joins us in our Spirit Square studio, along with Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer at the Charlotte Business Journal. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Welcome back. And Dr. Michael Bitzer, associate professor and chair of the Department of Politics and History at Catawba College in Salisbury, is also here. He contributes to WFAE's political blog, The Party Line, frequently, and is leaving his bow tie collection to science. Thank you for joining us as well.
It's good to be here as always.
Best laid plans. Before we talk about Anthony Fox, let's talk about Mel Watt, because it was announced at midnight last night that Mel Watt is a leading candidate, I think, for a secretary of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Yeah. Mel Watt, of course, is the congressman from the 12th congressional district, representing much of Charlotte and beyond, and he's been in Washington for a very long time. What is this job, the Federal Housing Finance Agency?
It's basically the agency that was created during 2008 to oversee Freddie and Fannie Mac, the two of the largest mortgage lenders in the country. And when they were basically on the precipice of defaulting and going bankrupt, this agency was, my understanding, was designed to oversee their transition back to health. And it looks like he's going to be appointed nominated as the director of this agency.
Is that a cabinet level position or below?
No, it's below, but it is a presidential appointment along with Senate confirmation. So this is going to be an interesting next couple of months along with Anthony Fox.
So when the announcement came out at midnight, and why did it come out at midnight, by the way? Are they trying to hide this?
I think it was just breaking overnight. I mean, it's been rumored that he was a finalist for some time. And I think, how the White House sort of confirms on background that this is going to happen. I think that
right. And remember when Anthony Fox was heading towards not seeking another term, the rumors were not only transportation secretary, but also that he might run for Congressman Watt's spot because this job was rumored to be going to Congressman Watt. So
given the fact that this job is probably going to go to Congressman Watt if he makes it to the confirmation hearings, and if in fact he wants it, do we know that he wants it?
We haven't seen any press from confirmations yet.
But given the fact that he might be leaving that position as the 9th District Congressman.
12th
District. So I don't know why I'm stuck on the 9th this morning, but the 12th District Congressman.
Stop picking on Robert Pittenger.
I'll do that. Is Anthony Fox kicking himself down the hallway now?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so because, Michael and I were talking about this before we came on. now he has an easy entree into coming back and running for either governor or U.S. Senate seat or something along those lines. So I don't think that he's going to regret being part of the cabinet.
So let's start with that question. Let's start with that question I asked Mayor Fox when he was here on April 3rd. It was obvious by looking at his face, if it wasn't obvious from those of you listening to the audio alone, that he was prevaricating, so to speak. Why do you suppose he wouldn't or couldn't answer the question directly, and why do you suppose he said what so many other politicians say when they're asked questions in these positions, that he's happy doing what he's doing when he'd already announced that he wasn't going to run for a third term, and obviously he was in conversations with the White House? Why the answer that he gave me?
Well, first of all, in terms of the not saying anything in advance, I mean, that is, never underestimate the power of the White House to muzzle people out there when it comes to these kinds of things. The only, I'm sure he had been told exactly what the city has been told since, which is everything comes from Washington. Everything comes from the White House. Your PR people aren't supposed to be making statements. We don't want you making statements. We want you guys to refer everybody to the White House press secretary. I mean, that's, you know, that's what's happened since the announcement and it, you know, beforehand. It's just bad form to be saying anything.
Well, I mean, you're talking about sort of all-star control freaks here. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're worried about everything. And so, and in fact, I do think the mayor was telling you the truth in one sense. He had declared that he wasn't running for a third term at that point, right? So he probably was happy. Because he's had nothing but anguish and grief. And he even said in his State of the City address that it had been the toughest year of his public life. The Panthers thing was still unresolved. He hasn't gotten his way on the streetcar. We still don't know about the capital plan. So,
the airport.
The airport doesn't seem to be really flying in his direction either. And it's funny because I remember the Monday after he had made that announcement that he wasn't running again, I sat down with him for a few minutes at the government center. And one of the first things he said was, "Well, I've accomplished everything I want to." And I thought,
Okay. Do you think that he decided not to run for a third term in part because he knew this was coming, or he had deep conversations with the White House about the possibility of this?
I asked him that last night, and you know, he says, "Well, I would have made the decision not to run for mayor either way."
Was he on the White House radar before the Democratic National Convention, or did that put him on the radar?
No, he was, because remember when he came in 09, in 09 and 10, he went with Hugh McCall and some other leaders, the chamber president, I believe, a couple of times to the White House for, you know, business and economy summits. He also went on social occasions. They watched a Chicago Bulls game and some other things. So I think the administration was well aware of Anthony Fox before. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think those previous engagements probably helped with recruiting the DNC.
And keep in mind, too, that, I mean, Mayor Fox has cultivated himself over his last two terms here to be sort of the president's go-to Democratic, big city Democratic mayor. So, I mean, countless times when the president has had some sort of policy that he wants to sort of tell the world is great for cities, the White House organizes a conference call of some sort or a press conference, and guess who's on the list? Invariably, Anthony
Fox
is on the list.
How did that happen? Because you talked about this on a piece you filed for All Things Considered, that he was the go-to guy for the president on major issues, that he was a foot soldier for the president, a loyal foot soldier for the president. When did that start? Why did it start? Why him? Why not some other mayor of a bigger city, perhaps?
Well, Mayor Fox has had some leadership role, I think, in the Democratic Mayors, National Democratic Mayors Association, which you know, Mayor Fox is an ambitious young politician, a Democrat, and I just think that he had he had an interest in making himself, and he has, you know, passionately believed and been a supporter of President Obama, and I think that he just felt like that was a natural thing. He put himself out there. The president sees a willing supporter. Why not use it?
Well, and remember, I mean, everything is political, of course, and you know, Anthony Fox is not only young and ambitious, he's an African American, he's an up and comer, he's in a state that was went Obama's way in 2008, and they thought they could win in 2012. So none of those attributes hurt either.
Yeah. The second term of a president is usually the term when they're starting to think about their legacy, what they're going to leave behind. And I'm just curious, since this is an important issue for the president, or he says it is, what legacy does he want to leave behind with regard to transportation?
Well, I think he certainly sees the nation's infrastructure in a really critical state right now. The American Society of Civil Engineers does an annual study of roads, bridges, dams, water infrastructure, and the overall grade for the nation's infrastructure is a D, as in not good in terms of below average. So, you know, there are some real issues. The electrical grid is an infrastructure that has got to be ramped up. Roads, transportation, these kinds of things are kind of going to be at the heart of what his legacy in the second term is. And he wants people around him that share that vision and can be the kind of advocate that he wants. So I think that's a critical reason.
And we heard the president talking in his sort of announcement, farewell to Ray LaHood, and announcement of Anthony Fox as his nominee. We heard him talking about the need for good infrastructure and creating jobs and getting America back on track and so forth. But one thing that he didn't mention, which is kind of interesting and actually has been a gigantic push and will be a major challenge moving forward with that for Mayor Fox, is actually in the aviation department. It's this national upgrade of the air traffic control system that has been underway for a number of years and will continue for many, many years to come, and is not without controversy, because it basically is transitioning all of the traffic of, you know, basically automating it, making it so that things are computerized when airplanes are taking off, and that they follow a very computerized GPS set course rather than having some of the variation that the pilot, you know, following the coordinates that he's been given by the air traffic controllers, which has created a whole separate set of concerns that are actually very present here in Charlotte in terms of noise. But that is something that the upgrading of the air traffic control, national air traffic control system.
But if there is a man,
major thing.
If there is a man who loves aviation,
who loves airports,
you can't go far with him.
It's funny that that'll be, yeah.
By the way, Julian should have an aviation show. That was. Yeah.
We'll be talking about the airport in a few minutes here, but the president has had 4 years to talk about the transportation, and I think he's talked about the need for upgrading the electric grid a couple of times. Has anything been done? What has Ray LaHood overseen in the last 4 years?
Well, you know, I think Ray LaHood is going to get a pretty good grade from a lot of people. I mean, remember, he came in at a time when there has not been a lot of money available. They have been especially aggressive with trains, which is interesting in our high-flying world. But, you know, high-speed rail, which some of that has come to North Carolina, they've been pretty aggressive with. And they've tried to do some work on roads. And, you know, the problem with roads, without devolving too far into specifics, is that cars get a lot better gas mileage, and so the gas tax revenue is not what it once was.
Right. The president has come under a lot of criticism for not having enough diversity on his cabinet. Is that one of the reasons, or is that the primary reason that Anthony Fox was chosen, or is he chosen because the president believes in him as a human being, believes in him as a leader, and believes in his transportation expertise?
Yes to all the above. Can you get a two-for-one? Sure. I mean, I think, you know, when the Congressional Black Caucus came out and, you know, started slapping him kind of on the wrist, I think that sent a signal that they want, you know, diversity within the cabinet. He certainly joins the Attorney General, Eric Holder, as a prominent African-American.
Why did he have to be prodded in that area, do you think?
I don't know. It's you know, certainly a base within the Democratic Party wants their voices and their symbolic and descriptive representation made, and so I think that's probably one of them.
Julie.
Yeah, no, I was just going to back up to what you said about the president believing in his transportation expertise. I mean, I don't think anyone thinks that Mayor Anthony Fox is an expert in transportation. That is not what he brings to this. But what he does bring is an ability to go out and talk the talk and be a cheerleader for the president's policies.
And an advocate for transit. I mean, he has advocated for it. He
transit.
May not be an expert.
He's a transit advocate. Transportation in general, maybe not so much.
Well, but that's typically what you find in a secretary of transportation.
But now hold those thoughts, because we have to take a break. We'll come back with more with Julie Rose and Eric Spanberg and Dr. Michael Bitzer. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Theater Charlotte, presenting Avenue Q, an award-winning musical about Princeton, a recent graduate who moves to New York to discover his purpose in life, May 17th through June 2nd. Tickets at carolinatix.org. Well, .org, rather. Well, in the 1940s, America joined the world at war. Countless patriotic Americans found themselves in a lot of unconventional jobs working for the war effort, and that includes women. And in fact, Rosie the Riveter, of course, is the iconic figure that people remember from that time as women in the factories replacing the men who went off to war. And she kind of set the stage for women in the workplace in the 50s, 60s, and 70s and beyond. Well, there's another group of women working on a project so secret not even they knew what they were working on. And we'll find out about the fascinating story of the women of Atomic City tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, as baby boomers age, the demand for home health aides is on the rise. What the shortage of caregivers means for patients, their families, and the home health care industry.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's just a hot issue.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Michael Bitzer from Catawba College has joined us. He's also one of the contributors, probably the contributor, to WFAE's Party Line political blog. Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, and Julie Rose, staff reporter here at WFAE. And we're talking about a lot of different things, but we're going to concentrate on Mayor Fox being nominated to be Secretary of Transportation in the Obama administration. Here's what the president said during his announcement of Mayor Fox as his nominee to replace Ray LaHood as Secretary of Transportation.
When Anthony became mayor in 2009, Charlotte, like the rest of the country, was going through a bruising economic crisis. But the city's managed to turn things around. The economy's growing. There are more jobs, more opportunity. And if you ask Anthony how that happened, he'll tell you that one of the reasons is that Charlotte made one of the largest investments in transportation in the city's history.
Now, let's look at that in pieces. The president.
Wait, I hear the scream from Raleigh. Okay, go ahead.
The president said that the city has managed to turn things around. The economy is growing. According to economists, however, North Carolina and Charlotte still lag the rest of the nation in the recovery. Our economic growth is very slow and very small. So is what the president said true?
Well, let's start with the fact that, and I said this when Pat McCrory ran for governor both times as well, you know, to credit a Charlotte mayor with controlling the economy or even really tipping the economy is crazy. It's a part-time job. It's a city that's run, obviously, by the city manager. So that's a little screwy to begin with, but, you know, you have to say something when you get up in front of the national media. But I think it is safe to say that Fox has pushed for a lot of policies that the president agrees with, mm-hmm. And that certainly there are economic benefits from them. So it's
well,
you know, 50-50.
Let's talk about that. Mr. Obama mentioned one of the largest investments in the transportation in the city's history, and he touted Mr. Fox's leadership on a new streetcar project, expanding the city's international airport, and extending Charlotte's light rail system. Again, didn't the largest investment in Charlotte's transportation history come under Pat McCrory when the Blue Line was built and under President Bush's transportation secretary, who was here to, I think, break ground and cut the ribbon?
Well, no, you're thinking of the first one. Yes, it was at the time the largest, which was the $462 million that went into the light rail line that exists right now. But the next piece, which is $1.2 billion going to UNC Charlotte, was done under Fox. He lobbied very heavily for that, and it was just signed, I guess, last fall by was it LaHood? No, it was Peter
Rogoff.
Peter Rogoff came from the Federal
Transit
Administration. So,
and that's half of $1.1 billion, so it's actually higher. It's 580 something.
Yeah, so I mean that's a legitimate claim. Now, I hate for us to get back into Groundhog Day, but the airport is a little bit more controversial. I mean, certainly the mayor did not oppose anything that's happened at the airport, but when you look at the intermodal yard in particular, that was really a Jerry Orr project.
Now, the intermodal yard, for those people who don't know what's going
rail
on
freight
out there,
yard,
it's a rail freight yard. It's a place where rail cars will come. In other words, it makes us a deep water port.
Right.
When the Panama Canal expands at the end of this year, these enormous ships that used to dock in Long Beach will be able to come through to the East Coast, dock in Savannah, dock in Charleston, dock in Wilmington, and put their cargo on a rail car. It will be shipped to Charlotte and shipped through the airport intermodal facility in Charlotte, which makes us a deep water port. That's a Jerry Orr project?
That's Jerry Orr. And
surely he had to get permission to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Funding.
Yes. And now you're testing my memory. I can't remember if that was approved under Fox or McCrory, but that project
ground was broken with Fox.
With Fox, so. Ground was broken with Fox, and that
so it's a factual statement to say right. that he helped break ground.
Yeah,
on that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think of that statement. Really, the biggest questions that you're going to ask are about the economic piece. First of all, because the numbers aren't there, and then secondly, because you know Charlotte Mayer again is a part-time job.
Okay. Mayor Fox was at the president's side when he made those statements about the
smiling
mayor.
Smiling very broadly.
I'll bet. And he had a chance to tout his own credentials as a transportation leader at that press conference.
I know well the opportunities and the challenges of maintaining and improving infrastructure and providing good transportation choices. And throughout my service in Charlotte, I've worked to use infrastructure to put Charlotte and therefore our country on the path of job growth today and tomorrow.
Now, of course, he is a proponent of the streetcar, and he does see that as an economic development vehicle, among other things. But has he ever spoken in the past of transportation as being a job creator?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Roads,
I mean, 485. He definitely has done that. I mean, I think if you're going to knock Mayor Fox on the transportation in the transportation area, it's going to come back to the streetcar, and not necessarily because he supported it, but because he was so stubborn and would not, I guess, demonstrate any flexibility to allow another way, compromise or bargain, particularly with a 9-2 advantage on his council.
Let's talk about the streetcar. I mean, when you look at the Lynx Blue Line, it's done everything they said proponents said it was going to do and more. It's exceeded ridership expectations. The economic development that has occurred along the route of the rail line has been phenomenal, particularly in Southend, and promises to be so as it heads out toward the university. And Mayor Fox has said the same thing will happen along Trade Street. And that corridor between Bates Ford Road and Central Avenue where the streetcar – he would like the streetcar to go. Why, in the face of the accomplishments of the Blue Line, has the Democratic City Council not supported a Democratic mayor in this effort?
Because you're asking to raise property taxes to do it. The Blue Line was funded through a specific transit tax that the voters agreed to. And there is just – I don't hear the Democrats on the council saying we think this streetcar idea is hooey. Most of them are saying we just can't do it through the property tax and then have our taxpayers hung up on it.
The funny thing is that I think that the mayor actually began to find his feet on this issue right before he decided not to seek his third term. And he's got this study group working on the entire transit plan, which is called the 2030 plan. And so they're talking about all these other ways to pay for, you know, using private funds and private operations in combination with taxpayer money. And if you shift the streetcar, at least some of the streetcar will be included in that. And I think if he shifted that 2.5 miles, which is what the fight is about, the $119 million that's in the capital plan, then you remove a lot of the political headache and you build a lot of support. But look, it took him a year to budge on this issue. And so I think stubbornness, as much as anything, really cost him political capital. Mm.
Michael, some people have looked at this nomination and said, what's his experience in the area of transportation, aside from advocating a streetcar and breaking ground on the Lynx Blue Line extension? What is that? And a lot of other secretaries of transportation, and there have only been 15 of them, 16 of them in the history of the country?
Since the late 60s,
They didn't come into the job with a lot of experience either. So what is the job of the Secretary of Transportation?
Well, you're basically overseeing the nation's rail lines, interstate highways, airports, various port activities, water transportation, you know, up and down the Mississippi River, and also safety issues. One of the Reagan's transportation secretary was North Carolina's Elizabeth Dole, and she came into the office not having, you know, just like Mayor Fox, I would say, not having the expertise or the knowledge, but really focused on things like safety issues. And she was the leading transportation secretary who got the states to raise their drinking age from 18 to 21. So what tends to happen is these people kind of find a niche, kind of find an area that they want to focus on. They may not be the experts, but they will certainly have staff around them, assistant secretaries, deputy secretaries that will do that. And they're kind of the point public person to kind of focus on specific specific issues that they want to focus on and that their president wants to focus on.
The Department of Transportation has 55,000 employees.
I was just going to mention, Mike, I mean, look at this. 55,000 employees, $70 billion annual budget. Anthony Fox is not even in control of the employees or the budget of Charlotte. But remember, if he was, it would be about $1.7 billion, give or take, and 7,000 employees. So this is a huge step up.
Wow. Now, and usually the transportation secretary is somebody who can go around and dispense federal funds, you know, be kind of the deliverer of pork. Now that we're dealing with a much more restricted federal budget and the president's budget proposal is about 3% of his $3.7 trillion, there's going to be some hands tied in terms of where this money can go, and that's critical when the secretary wants to direct that money.
Any idea where the president or where Mayor Fox's area of particular interest, his pet project, his niche might end up being?
Streetcars?
For
sure,
can't
transit.
Do it.
I mean, I think transit, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, any kind of rail.
Light rail. I mean, Ray LaHood, you know, was kind of the high speed rail thing for at least the last half of his.
I think Fox will be all about density and how transit can build neighborhoods and add jobs and help the economy.
The current Republican Transportation Secretary, Ray LaHood, came from Illinois. He was a representative in the House before that, so he has a lot of experience with Congress. Mr. Fox has not had a congressional seat, so he doesn't have a lot of experience with the Congress. Is that a point in his favor? In other words, they don't know him.
They don't know him, but he doesn't know them either. The interesting thing, I think, is going to be partly the Senate confirmation. Just see how much Republicans in particular on the Senate Commerce Committee go after his lack of expertise. Mm-hmm. But then he's going to have to deal with the House Republicans who start the budget process. And they are going to be in no mood, really, to start funding massive projects that potentially could bring some good.
But now his Republican predecessor, Ray LaHood, has said that Anthony Fox, will do a terrific job. So does that diffuse any Republican criticism?
Ray LaHood was a very moderate Republican who I doubt you would find in the U.S. House Republican caucus at this point.
He also brought a lot, I'm told, of money home to Illinois, his home state. Will we see, you think, the same thing happening in North Carolina and particularly here in Charlotte, where God knows our transportation needs for roads and mass transit are increasing by the minute?
I think, as Eric said, if you can put your thumb on the scale, it will help.
Yeah. Yeah. Although Michael and I have talked about this a lot. I mean, the dream scenario for any reporter or political scientist is just to hear the first phone call from Secretary Fox to Governor McCrory and just sort of what the interplay is like. Fine.
Well, let's talk about that. Because we have a couple of key issues going on here. We have, aside from the streetcar, we have the state of North Carolina under I'm not sure who's leading this aside from Jerry Orr, it turns out, and Mr. Dortch, who was used to be until last week the head of the airport
advisory committee,
who was fired by Anthony Fox for trying to take the airport away from us surreptitiously.
While working for a city council appointing committee.
So now,
oops,
when Mr. Fox goes to Washington, there's a movie in that, I think, what is likely to happen? We have the state looking at taking the airport. They have waited graciously for the city report to come out. And the city report, which the city paid $150,000 to finance.
That's a tough check to write.
Yeah. The report has said essentially it ought to go to an authority, but not the authority that the state wants to set up, that the city ought to have a bigger voice in the authority. Does this have to go through the Department of Transportation for final approval, or can the Department of Transportation put the kibosh on it?
No, the FAA does have to. There are approvals. The FAA has to be involved. There's transferring of permits and all sorts of things. Yes, and the FAA has been involved in Asheville, which
has been held up.
Right? Yeah, right. So, I mean, they're definitely.
So does this end this?
I don't think so.
No,
no.
I think it
And I have a hard time seeing – right, right, exactly. And I have a hard time seeing Secretary Fox arriving on his first day and walking over to the FAA administrator's office and saying, all right, you got to kill this thing, you know? I mean, and then how that really is going to play either. I mean, I don't
– It's going to be leverage.
Yeah.
It's going to be leverage
say,
to renegotiate.
However,
well, why wouldn't he do it?
There are messages that can be sent in other ways, I think. There, you know, there are – subtler arts. It
will take your highway money away.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
you know,
that or the control tower isn't
correct.
Isn't
I mean,
there
the control tower is
funding to move it. Yeah.
And remember, the control tower is something that really Mayor Fox went out and got. Jerry Orr had been asking for it for a long time, but Fox's influence and sway with the Obama administration really made that one happen.
So if he goes to Washington, and it's probably inevitable that he will, and he takes this job, will the state try to fast track this airport thing to beat him to Washington with it? In other words, to get it passed and through.
I mean, you can't do it that fast.
Yeah.
Even by the done standards of Raleigh right now, you can't get it through that fast.
They could pass the bill.
They could pass the bill, certainly.
But the actual transition, it's supposed to right now in the bill, it's supposed to happen within 90 days, which
there's no way.
Even the advisor, the consultant says, look, 6 months to a year quickest, you could get this done.
Do you think that he would simply walk away from this issue, or do you think he would make it his business to exert influence to stop this from happening in Charlotte?
Oh, I don't think he would walk away because I think he feels very strongly that this has not been handled in the proper manner and that it's been rushed. Now, when he says, and a lot of others in city government say, hey, I don't really have an opinion about an authority. I don't like the way it's been handled. That's half true. I don't think they like an authority either. But certainly, at minimum, he would want it to be slowed down and would probably take steps to do that.
And the consultant's report puts them in a tough spot too because now they have an outside expert who has surveyed airport managers across the country who agree that airport authorities tend to be the better structure and would be better for Charlotte's future if structured properly. And so we haven't yet heard the city council discuss, although they had a closed-door meeting for almost 2 hours last night discussing potential legal activity regarding the airport. But we haven't yet heard them weigh in on, okay, now do we think maybe an authority is the right way to pursue, or do we – all they're saying is slow it down and let's have more conversation about this because clearly it's an important issue.
A lot of things that we didn't know before or we thought otherwise about are now slipping out. I think it was revealed in the paper this morning that U.S. Airways wants a big seat at the table in choosing the next head of the airport, and they argue that they should have a big seat at the table because they are the biggest tenant. But isn't that like the fox running the hen house?
Well, I mean, yes, in a way it is, but it's not unprecedented. And Doug Parker, the airline CEO, Julie was there the day he was in town, and he didn't beat around the bush. He just said, you know, we expect to have a say. Now,
we know people. We work in a lot of airports across the country. We know who's got great credentials. We know who we think needs to. But what we really want is to clone Jerry Orr.
Right. Exactly.
That's what they want.
Yes. What happened with Jerry Orr? Why is he so unhappy with the city?
Well, I equate Jerry Orr to, the legendary football coach that has been at a school forever, and he's done a lot of great things, but increasingly he has accumulated more power, and he's not used to anyone saying no. And so
they've been saying no since Mayor Fox took over?
Kurt Walton said no for Jerry to control the police that are at the airport.
But he's gone.
Kurt Walton's gone, but the policy stands. In the airport, Jerry and the rest of the airport, they're furious about the fact that Chief Rodney Moreau now sets the standards and the cost, which are borne by the airport, for how security is operated at the airport. That's one. There was this fight about the bonds, you know, whether the bonds were misspent or misallocated, I guess. They know they were, but then the city clamped down and said, look, we're giving you tighter financial controls. The airport didn't like that. Essentially, Jerry's run a fiefdom out there with mayors and councils approving it, but he's very frustrated that there's more scrutiny over him.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more discussion on the airport and about Mayor Fox going to Washington and some other issues that we can get to in the time allotted here as we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Thank you.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Carolina Neurosurgery and Spine Associates, pediatric and adult care for the region since 1940. Welcoming Dr. Scott Waite, a fellowship-trained pediatric neurosurgeon. CarolinaNeurosurgery.com. Well, as baby boomers age, the demand for home health aides is on the rise. What the shortage of caregivers means for patients, their families, and the home health care industry. The topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to jump in here, we'll try to get out of your way. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Steve, as a host of Morning Edition, you could sit behind the mic in the studio every day. Why do you leave the studio?
Because to know a story, you need to see it. Meet people for myself, because that is the way that you learn, and it's at the heart of what we do at NPR's Weekday News Magazine. We're getting out to look at the story, bring it back to you, and share what we've learned on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Comprehensive, in-depth morning news, weekdays from 5 till 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Julie Rose from WFAE News, Eric Spanberg, a staff writer for Charlotte Business Journal, and Dr. Michael Bitzer, a chair of the History and Political Science Department at Catawba College and frequent contributor to WFAE's The Party Line blog. And we're talking about the big story, which I guess is that Mayor Fox may be going to Washington to become the next Secretary of Transportation. The Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, led by Senator Jay Rockefeller, a Republican from West Virginia. How come he leads that in the Senate, which is democratically controlled, by the way?
Jay Rockefeller is a Democrat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had Republican. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
He will likely hold the confirmation hearings, and Senator Rockefeller has characterized the nation's transportation challenges as daunting. Is that because of the need to improve our crumbling infrastructure, or because of the lack of money to improve our crumbling infrastructure?
It's both. That ASCE, the Civil Engineers Study, said that a total of about $3.7 trillion is needed over the next 10 to 15 years.
How much do we spend in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Not that much, but our total federal budget is $3.7 trillion. Okay. So basically, he would want they would say you would need to spend an entire year's federal budget on just infrastructure needs and concerns.
And that would be what? The highway system, the bridges?
Highways, dams, airports, ports. I mean,
how did we get into this situation? Because we built the interstate highway system thanks to Dwight Eisenhower.
I was going to say, Eisenhower's not been with us for a while.
Yeah.
But we've been building it continuously. It just didn't happen in 1955. We've been building it continuously. So
the country has also grown.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, from 200 million
to— Why haven't we been keeping up?
The priorities. Where have been the priorities? And it's just, you know, that's Congress and that's the president's call. And the priorities just have not been focused on those things.
Because that's one of the things that government is supposed to do. Whether you want small government or big government, one of the things that government is supposed to do is make the country run, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's interesting about this issue is that most of your chambers of commerce, your business groups are in favor of expansion and repair of infrastructure and roads and all those kinds of things. The fight and the rub begins with – how do you pay for it, and how much do you spend on it?
Because, and who gets it?
And who gets it? And of course, there's also the contention. Remember, the other thing that Anthony Fox will be delving into from a federal perspective now is that people fight over roads versus transit, rail lines and ports and all those things. So it's complicated quickly.
Before we move on to some other issues, if he goes to Washington and becomes the Secretary of Transportation, we've kind of speculated what he might do about the airport. What about the streetcar? This is his pet project. Will he find the money to make that happen for Charlotte?
Well, I mean, that's city money, and they did get a federal grant for the first little stretch that they're building, $25 million grant. I don't know that the streetcar will be in his sights. He's going to have bigger things to deal with.
Yeah. So this morning I read that Jennifer Roberts has decided not to run for mayor, but she would be interested in being the interim mayor. if he goes to Washington and steps down as mayor before his term is up at the end of December. These other people, Malcolm Graham, Dan Clodfelter, Ed Peacock, Becky Carney, Patrick Cannon, John Lasseter, Michael Barnes, Ruth Samuelson, David Hauer, have all been rumored to be interested in running for the job. How many of them have actually said they want the job?
Only Edwin, who I think sent out a text almost as fast as Anthony Fox stepped off the podium. Now,
he's a Republican.
He is a Republican, mm-hmm. former city councilman. That list that you just read off, Malcolm Graham, I don't think will run for mayor. I think he is very much interested in Mel Watts' newly vacant.
Yeah. And he's a state senator.
Yeah, and Ruth Samuelson, of course, is in line to be the next speaker, very likely, in Raleigh. So I don't know if she would want to give that up to be mayor. I wouldn't think so, because if you're Speaker of the House with a Republican mayor, you're living pretty good. Right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just, I mean, FYI, also, the city council will choose an interim mayor. It must be a Democrat.
How do they do?
It will be someone who is not running. So it will not be one of their own people who's running. So it won't be Mitchell or Cannon.
Could it be somebody on the council itself?
Absolutely. As long as they're a Democrat.
It could be as long as
Mitchell's not running.
Mitchell's not going to run. Right. Oh, okay.
He said he would run at large, but not for mayor. So it could be.
And if you're on the council, what would be the plus side of being the interim mayor? You would lose your seat on council, therefore you would lose your vote. Why would you want it?
I don't think my guess is it's not going to be someone on council. Okay. I guess Andy Doolin has said he's not running, but mm-hmm. other than that—
It has to be a Democrat, though.
Yeah. Right, but I was trying to find someone who's not running. I think it's going to be someone else. Jennifer Roberts would make sense. Harvey Gantt was the rumor for a while, but I heard that Harvey Gantt laughed pretty heartily when that was presented.
I mean, it's just someone to keep the seat warm, really. They don't have a vote,
it's a caretaker,
except for breaking
right,
tie.
Right.
Let's talk about Panther Stadium for just a few minutes here, because the city voted to give the Panthers, $87.5 million?
Mike Collins money is what we call it.
Why? Oh, yes, that's right. The total renovation tab is $147 million, for which we get escalators.
Video boards.
And big screens. Very big screens.
And the Panthers have to stay here for 6 years with financial penalties if the team leaves within 10. And the deal is here that if Jerry Richardson passes on, within 2 years the team must be sold. And obviously, wouldn't it be sold to somebody outside of the city and probably someone outside of the Carolinas? Because is anybody rich enough here to buy that team?
There are people that are rich enough, but I don't know that there's anybody rich enough that seems to want the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially what the city did was they bought probably 3 or 4 years before they start a new round of negotiations. And the hope from James Mitchell, among others, is that the state legislature would be more amenable to providing some sort of state money or raising the tax that they wouldn't raise this time around so that you could secure a longer deal. Remember, when we started this conversation, it was going to be 15 years. It got knocked back to 6.
Is that because the money got reduced?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the state didn't kick anything in?
Right. Governor McCrory said no.
Now explain that, because this is the biggest thing on the marquee in the state of North Carolina. The fact that the Carolina Panthers exist here, if you believe all the political hype that goes into getting teams and building stadiums, having an NFL team is like the beacon at the top of the tower. If the beacon goes away, what does that say about North Carolina, and why wouldn't the legislature kick in?
Well, I guess let's start with why the legislature wouldn't kick in. I think they just made a political calculation, and they didn't. They didn't want to raise
taxes. There's no new money in the budget.
There's no new money. And now, of course, you can argue that it's easy to argue it was just a local. They were granting authority for the locals to make the decision, but they wouldn't do it. And so that's why they did that. As far as losing the team, I mean, yeah, obviously that would be a huge black eye in terms of cachet.
Is it inevitable?
No, I don't think it's inevitable. I think what's inevitable is you're going to spend a hell of a lot more money to secure the team to the area long term
and build a new stadium. I mean, 15 years. They talk very openly, the city council and the Panthers, about, you know, we got maybe another 15 years in this stadium, and then we need something new.
And look what Atlanta's doing. They're
spending
there are plenty of cities who are willing to spend and buy the whole thing.
I actually think that Ron Carley, the new city manager, has a pretty good perspective on this. I mean, he said, look, if you want to have professional sports, no matter how distasteful you find this, this is part of the process. And so you have to decide as a community and as politicians whether you want the team or not. I mean, it's really that simple.
But it's the Atlanta Falcons. It's not the Charlotte Panthers.
That was Councilman Cooksey's
gripe. That's right.
In all the closed session minutes, you see him saying, "We're not getting. We need to be. This needs to be the Charlotte Panthers if we're the only ones putting money in." And there was quite a bit of pushback with the city council. You see in their private sessions talking about, now why isn't Mecklenburg County kicking in here, and why aren't we asking South Carolina? And the state is collecting the income taxes on all of these player salaries. I mean, why aren't they?
And, you know, I mean, we chuckle a little bit at Councilman Cooksey's concerns, but, you know, in Miami, they did exactly that. The Florida Marlins became the Miami Marlins when they moved into a $500 million publicly funded stadium that's been an absolute disaster.
And what are the answers to those questions?
You see the staff answering in those minutes that, first of all, the county, we just can't see the county, what they're dealing with, and with this whole revaluation thing that they're, and all the money they're going to lose having to go back and redo their revaluation, we just can't see them even giving us the time of day. I don't know if those conversations ever took place, but they don't seem to have taken place, at least from the minutes that you see. You know, in South Carolina, it was... I don't think they had approached South Carolina.
No, I mean, I think they knew that was a non-starter. Actually, the tax that they talked about, this restaurant tax, it would have raised $1 billion over 30 years. It wasn't explained well, but it actually would have been a pretty good way to approach this, because they would have been able to fund these smaller improvements and have a seed fund, if you will, for building a new stadium, and they would not have had to go back and get another round of approval, because it would have been 30 years. I don't think they ever laid that case out very well. May not have mattered in Raleigh, but for locals.
And again, South Carolina wasn't asked for any money, and this is called the Carolina Panthers for a reason. The Airport Authority, would South Carolina have a seat on the Airport Authority? Do they have a dog in the race, in other words?
Right,
are they
now,
working behind
the current
the
version of the bill, and there have been different versions of the bill, but the current version of the bill does have these two at-large that would be appointed by the rest of the 11 members, and there is no voter requirement that they be a resident of Mecklenburg County or North Carolina even. So theoretically, at least the version, and there have been seven versions, and there will be more, but at least the current version does not... It leaves room that potentially someone from York County or could be one of those two at-large, basically, appointees.
There has been some inclinations from York County officials saying, hey, you know, we've got some interest in this as well. Could you think about, you know, that?
I mean, if Iredell gets to be on the and you know, Lincoln, Union Lincoln, and Lincoln County, York is right there practically.
If you're talking about a regional authority, it would make a lot of sense. Absolutely, it would. Of course, regionalism is sort of
crossing
teetering.
The straight line.
It's teetering right now, what with the trust issues going on.
Ron Carley certainly understands state lines and regional issues because he came from Arlington, Virginia, where they deal with metropolitan Washington, which is suburban Maryland, suburban Virginia, and the city of Washington, D.C. I mean, surely we are headed in that direction.
Yeah, I think so. And I have to believe that that probably stood in his favor when he was interviewing for the job, because all the issues that we're talking about and ones that are going to emerge in the near future are all headed in that direction. Mm.
Let's go back to Fox and the Secretary of Transportation. Is this a good move for him? Is this a job he should want? I mean, where does he go from here? This is a 3.5-year job. So where does he go if he takes this job when it's over?
The likelihood is probably 2 years max. And
2 years?
Well, simply because by the final year of a second term, people start fleeing and preparing for the future.
Right.
So my guess is, look at 2016. What have we got going on here in North Carolina? We've got, of course, a presidential race where North Carolina is probably going to be another battleground state. We're going to have a U.S. Senate race with Richard Burr, and we're going to have a governor's race. There's going to be some interesting dynamics at the top of the Democratic ticket that could potentially play out here that could leave an opening for somebody who is ambitious.
So you think that Fox might
young,
run for governor?
Governor, U.S. Senate.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
You know, if Hillary Clinton – let's start playing hypotheticals. I know it's 3 years out, but if Hillary Clinton is at the top of the Democratic ticket and Anthony Fox is also kind of second-tier U.S. Senate, governor, Boy, that would be an interesting race, set of race to watch.
I guess from a Charlotte reporter perspective, we have to pull for the gubernatorial matchup, right? The two former mayors. That's purely for entertainment purposes. I also want what's best for the community, as you know.
And selling newspapers. People
right.
still do buy newspapers,
yes.
don't they?
Yes.
The president, when he made this announcement of Anthony Fox, characterized Charlotte as one of the nation's most vibrant cities, and he did not use the suffix Carolina. North Carolina.
Nor, we made it!
Nor did NPR. When I woke up the morning this was announced, and NPR said the mayor of Charlotte has been nominated by the president to be the next Secretary of Transportation. And I said, where's Charlotte?
We're in the big leagues.
They always say North Carolina. Have we finally broken free of the need to have NC after our name in the national media?
Well, I think NPR went on to say it's home of Thomas Jefferson's University, so maybe – no, they didn't. I didn't say it.
And that's where Fort Sumter is.
That's right. Oh, I love that low country food. I guess going back to what you said, Mike, if you hang on to the football team and you have a cabinet member, then maybe you can drop NC once and for all.
What did it? Was it the Democratic National Convention being here? Is it the fact that Charlotte is now, I think, in the top 25 tier of cities? Yeah. That we didn't used to be in the top 25, now we are. What allows the national media to suddenly refer to us simply as Charlotte?
I think the city is coming into its own. And, you know, for a long time, we've kind of – Charlotte has seen Atlanta as kind of the big brother and, you know, dominating the region. I have to say Charlotte's pretty much here. You know, we've talked about it, and we are here.
They like us. They really like us.
Thank you, Sally.
In my interactions with the folks – in Washington at NPR, when I file for them. There was a time where when I tagged out, I had to say for NPR News, I'm Julie Rose in Charlotte, North Carolina. Uh-huh. I mean, there was a time, and they would always say WFAE in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I started to notice sort of a transition away from that during the banking crisis when we were reporting out of Charlotte, Bank of America, headquartered in Charlotte, Wells Fargo, Wachovia, all of that happening in Charlotte, Charlotte, Charlotte. They started to hear it more. The national people started to know on the business front, Charlotte was in North Carolina. And then, but really, the Democratic National Convention, I think, was the point where those NPR editors were saying, okay, fine, we don't need to say North Carolina
anymore. Is that a style book decision that suddenly appears at a news organization's news desks where you
I don't think it's in the NPR style book necessarily, but I think just enough
just
people
happens,
know.
It evolves.
Yeah, it just happens over time.
We've made it. Okay.
For Charlotte, North Carolina Talks, I'm Mike Cobb.
That's right.
That's not my line.
Eric Spanberg, senior writer for the Charlotte, North Carolina Business Journal. Julie Rose, reporter for WFAE News, and Michael Bitzer, associate professor and chair of the History and Political Science Department at Catawba College in Salisbury, North Carolina. Thank you all for being with us. Thank you.